Hello and welcome to the Cinema Judge. To all my loyal listeners out there, thanks so much for coming back. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard. And everybody out there, I hope my voice finds you well. Approaching the bench today, we have Saw X or Saw 10, however you want to look at it. Now here's a brief synopsis here. This movie actually takes place a few days after the first one, so this isn't a new one at the end. It's in between some of the movies. So here's a scenario in this movie. A sick and desperate John travels to Mexico for a risky and experimental medical procedure in hopes of a miracle cure for his cancer, only to discover the entire operation is a scam to defraud the most vulnerable. So that's where this one picks up. John is the original killer in Saw, just in case you didn't know that. So here's a trailer for Saw X.
The cancer is still spreading. I'm afraid there's nothing else we can do. There is one person who might be able to help.
Our program is a two-pronged treatment outside Mexico City. The results have been stunning.
She saved my life.
You're in very good hands with us.
After that, what happens then?
Your whole life happens then. John Kramer.
According to these scans, the tumor was never removed.
How much time do I have?
Months, at best.
I still have a lot of work that needs to be done. Hello, everyone. It's time to play a game. You all pretended to cure me, but what I have planned for each of you is very real.
Peace came upon me. No light, no sound.
The only thing I have not provided is your anesthetic. But trust me, you will want to remain alert.
Out of all the men to choose, you picked John Kramer?
Please, don't hesitate.
Place a big enough piece of your cerebral tissue into the glass enzyme tank. This will save your life. So sleep.
This is not retribution, it's a reawakening.
Live or die, the choice is yours.
Now you might be asking yourself, what is that song they're playing throughout the trailer? Well, not to worry. It is a great song by the Hollies called Air That I Breathe. It's a classic, and I always find it very entertaining when any kind of movie has a song in it that really doesn't fit the movie at all. But it does fit when you put it together like that. It's just whatever, because of the polarity of it all, it's always funny when they do that. And it's great to hear great songs that you don't always hear. It introduces bands like the Hollies to a wider audience that might not have ever heard of them. But now they might go, who sings that song? Well, the Hollies, The Air That I Breathe. Truly an awesome song. Coming up first, we're going to hear from Mark Berg and Oren Colles, the producers. They're going to talk a little bit more about the main character and the story. And immediately after that, we're going to have a featurette. Now, in this featurette, the studios, they send me a pre-edited, like just to say, a summary of a movie or whatever subject that they want to cover. In there, we're going to hear from the director and other people. And in a little bit, I'm going to give you a website. In case you would like to watch these interviews and the scenes that they show within these all these featurettes or whatever it is, the TV version is streaming on demand right now. So a little bit, I'll give you that website. But in the meantime, here's that interview with them and then that featurette talking a little bit more about the story.
There's a lot of heart to this story. There's a lot of John Kramer feeling taken advantage of. There's a lot of John. You learn more about John Kramer in this movie than you have in the entire franchise. This kind of sets up why John Kramer became Jigsaw and what he is trying to accomplish.
John Kramer has cancer. John Kramer meets with his doctor, has an MRI. It's not good. The doctor tells him he has a very limited time to live. John Kramer's found out that there's an experimental, out-of-the-country process that they're having great success with. He goes to Mexico City, where they're hosting the surgery. He goes and does it, and he finds out that it's a fraud.
How much time do I have?
Months, at best.
I still have a lot of work that needs to be done.
It was our desire to make a film that feels more like the early Saw movies.
This, in our mind, is really Saw 2. This movie happens weeks after the end of Saw 1.
I help people overcome inner obstacles.
It needed to look like the early Saw movie.
They were shot on 35. They were scuzzy and gritty. There's our cynical greens and ochre yellows.
We're working with a cinematographer here who has just done a fabulous job.
One of the great challenges of this project was really putting together an excellent trap team. And I feel like we have this amazing team. And I think that the fans are going to be happy.
No, no!
All the people that really love Saw.
I want to play a game.
My job is to bring humanity to John Kramer. The traps I leave to the people who are disturbed enough to come up with some of these things.
And we go back to what I think the audience most enjoys about John Kramer's character.
I wage war. I wage war against mediocrity.
What struck me was the relationship between John and Amanda. I think that's some of the best passages or scenes.
Everyone deserves a chance. You should know that more than anyone.
It's super fun to be able to come all the way back to the beginning.
We really did this movie for the fans.
The story's compelling, and the Saw fans, next level.
We really tried to pay them back for the loyalty and the fans that have been there since Saw 1. And that's why there's the Easter eggs, there's throwbacks. We just really tried to say, you've asked for this movie, we're making this for you.
Now, if you'd like to watch the TV version of this, go to bit.ly/cinemajudge. bit.ly/cinemajudge. But I think that featurette gives you a pretty good feel about what this movie's about. Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from one of the producers, Oren, again, and he's going to talk about when they started going to all these fan fests and Comic Cons or whatever you want to call them, they started realizing John Kramer was seen as a hero to a lot of people, just like the guy says how other characters who might be violent or killers might be deemed hero-esque. And it's really kind of cool hearing a producer talk about this. He listens to the audience and they realize, okay, we can start doing this with the character, or we can move different directions. So they feed off each other. They just don't blindly go in. This is what we're going to do. We don't care what the fans think. So it's really fun for me to hear that a producer is very conscious of us, the people out here, and what they want. And then we're going to hear from Tobin Bell, who plays John Kramer / Jigsaw. And he's going to go a little bit more into his character. And that's another thing. I love hearing a character being described by the guy who's playing him, or the gal, or whomever. It's just getting inside their head of, who is this person? Why are they acting this way? And then how it forms, because sometimes when you're an actor, actress, whatever it is, you have to try to play somebody who might not be the greatest person in the world, but you have to try to find something to say, this is why they're doing it. And it must be an incredible challenge for anybody out there who has to play a complicated character like this. And then we're going to hear from the director again, and he's going to talk about Tobin and how he feels he reacted to delving more into this character, because like they say in these interviews, this is the most you've ever heard about him and his background, who he is and why he is who he is, and all of those things. So they're really fleshing out the main character that maybe a lot of us don't know about.
Something that was really shocking to Mark and I is either Saw 2 or Saw 3 were at Comic-Con. And now we've really got a lot of momentum. They've made the room bigger every time, and the walls keep flying out. And Mark and I were on the dais, and they were talking, and they kept talking about the hero and the protagonist and the hero. And we never really looked at it like he was a hero, but he was a hero to people. And not because he's a murderer, not because he's, you know, whether John Wick's a hero, whether, you know what I mean? So, but it really kind of changed, at least for me personally, and I know I've been, you know, Mark and I've talked about it, how we looked at Jigsaw or John Kramer. But they talked about the hero, the protagonist, and it really got us. So that was, for me, a big change of the way we thought about the films.
One of the things that intrigued me about this story is that we go back to what I think the audience most enjoys about John Kramer's character, which is that he's philosophical and has a strong moral compass, but also lives in total contradiction to what you would think that compass would be. We know from Saw 2 that he really only became the Jigsaw after he was diagnosed with cancer and lost his son and all that sort of thing. We know that he's pretty much infallible, and he's often said, if you can anticipate the human mind, it leaves nothing to chance. So we've seen a kind of very rigid formulation of that notion of his character in all the Saw movies. What I really liked about this one is that we go deep in all those things, but we also do things that I think are very unexpected.
John Kramer, he has been a civil engineer and an architect for almost 40 years. And what interests me about him is that he is interested in many, many, many things from a point of view of philosophy, theology. He's extremely well-read, very intelligent, and very committed, unlike many of us who look around us and complain about the world or some aspect of the world but do nothing. He does something. Whether you agree with what he does or not is another subject entirely. It's my job to flush him out, to be on his side, and to draw audiences in to the thought process.
I think Tobin was really impressed by how much this story truly immerses itself in his character, in his emotional journey. And, you know, it's almost as though the creators realized that it was a big mistake to make a Saw film with no John Kramer and no Tobin in it whatsoever. And so this is almost like a counter reaction to that by let's go all in with Tobin. And so, of course, as an actor, he saw this, I'm sure, as kind of his life's great work. Artistically speaking, I mean, this is his biggest movie by far. So that had to really impress him and intrigue him. He's always sort of the gatekeeper of being true to this kind of enigma that is the John Kramer character, that he doesn't get revenge, he doesn't kill, even though kind of looks like he does. But still, we don't talk in those terms. They're not traps, they're tests. They're, you know, disciples and subjects and this sort of thing. So he always makes sure that we're very careful about those aspects of the story. He really likes John's philosophical side and his use of metaphor, which I think we did a good job with in this film.
At least for me, I love hearing the people behind the camera, the people who are making these films, how much they care for these characters and how they really want to make a character relatable. In that, when they're making these kind of films, you're not just slapping them together and letting it go. You're investing a lot of your time into a product because if it stinks, it's on you. So I really love hearing, even though it's a horror film, people might just take it as a throwaway, there's a lot that goes into these character building, their motivations, and hearing them develop that, talking about that, and wanting to make a character that's there, not just one-dimensional. And I'm sure actors really appreciate that. They just don't want to play just a paper-thin character. And we're going to hear a little bit about that from Tobin Bell. And he talks about the script and delves a little bit more into his character. But then we're going to move on to the producers, and they're going to talk about the traps and how they've evolved, how they've changed, and what's the purpose behind some of these traps. They're not just to kill people. They're there testing them because of what they did to him. And I love how they work through this and how they got to those mind frame. And then also we're going to hear from the director talking about the traps. But then we're going to hear from somebody that you don't always hear about. They have interviews from the production designer, the guy who helped develop some of these traps, Anthony Stabley. And he really gives some really good interviews here talking about the whole process of these traps. And I just find it incredibly awesome. Check it out.
It all starts with the writing. And the script for this particular film is very strong. Perhaps one of the strongest Saw films. Josh Stahlberg and Pete Goldfinger did a marvelous job. And when I first read the script, I was very impressed with it. And it was in very, very good shape, very tight. And the casting has been wonderful. So we have a good film here. John's a magician in a certain way. Sometimes what you see is not what you get with him. So let's assume, though, that what you saw in Saw 3 was actually happening. Then we've had to create moments at different points in time. This one, I would say, happens somewhere between Saw 1, Saw 2, somewhere in that zone.
The traps you see in most of the movies are John trying, they're John's traps. And this is, John is so devastated by the news and by what happens that he's actually making traps for them. These are their traps because what they did to him personally. Whether you're the anesthesiologist, whether you're the doctor, whether you're the person that's housing you for this scam. And I think he makes them very personal.
And the other thing we tried to, I think the traps started getting over the top. And one of the things we really looked at is bringing the traps down in scale and size to where you could basically, you know, everything you need to make these traps is in Home Depot.
I wanted these traps to work more mechanically in real life than we've ever done before. We've had to frankly, use a lot of editing trickery and digital visual effects in order to overcome the shortcomings that we had on production. So for this one, I'm like, let's really make what we're going to shoot and make it work on screen. So our production designer, Anthony Stabley, who is one of the most enthusiastic people I've ever met in my life, he absolutely was for that, and he sought out a team among the crew members in Mexico City that could really pull it off. And that's not to say that everything worked perfectly, because it didn't. And as is often the case, there are a lot of wires and people hidden in things that are operating things.
I think what's awesome about the traps in this film is the fact that they are interwoven with the story. They're very specific to each character. So I'm not going to say, you know, the trap and the character, but I think they're really well thought out. Additionally, we spent several months testing the traps. We wanted them to be reflective of the original Saw. So you see a lot of oxidized metal. You see components that you believe John Kramer's going to be able to actually construct. And we also, you know, connected the medical aspects of the movie, which are very important. This film has a combination of grittiness and, like, beauty. There's, like, a beauty in Mexico, the landscapes, the architecture. But also there's, like, this intensity of the factory and how that relates to John Kramer's background as an engineer, you know. And I think that that's a great fusion between the two. And I talk a lot with Tobin. You know, we walk through the sets. He says this is, you know, he enjoys the sets, and he says, I would really like this, and we talk about what could be realistic, and there's a lot of reveals. And one of the things that I think is really important to talk about is that our job as a production designer, my job, is that there's an art in horror. I really believe that. So when we're talking about that, we're talking about how much information we give, how much information we hold back, and also what we're going to reveal. That's really important. I think one of the great challenges of this project was really putting together an excellent trap team. But I felt like Tonio Rodriguez was excellent in leading his team. Our team was about 6 to 8 people. You know, we had to fabricate, we had to weld, we had to have painters and prop makers and people that would really be able to test and be knowledgeable and making these mechanisms that were effective and realistic. We were also really, really lucky that we had Hosh, who's in charge of special effects, mechanical effects. And then, as it turned out, I think it was a blessing because we weren't really sure what was happening with prosthetics, but as it turned out, Fractured Effects came on board, and they were just phenomenal. So I feel like we have this amazing team, and I think that the fans are going to be happy, all the audience members, all the people that really love Saw.
We've heard people talk about traps. Now we're going to hear Toby Bell talk about what his character sees them as, because, as we discussed shortly ago, he's not there just to murder or torture people. Everybody in these said traps can escape. They just have to do something that might be very, very, very painful, but it's not there just to be a murder weapon. And that's how that character is, and that's how Tobin has to play it through, because he's giving them an opportunity. It might not be a very pleasant one, but there is an opportunity. And he talks about that. And then after that, we have a scene for you. In this scene, there's a guy sitting in a chair with these tubes on his eyes. He could get in serious, you know, the stuff could kill him here, but he has an option. If he turns this little knob with his other hand, he'll snap his fingers, but he'll live. So that's that dilemma, that's that trap, that's that scenario.
Traps. John doesn't view them that way. He views them as test situations. And I know it's easy and convenient because they are as terrifying as they are to think of them as traps. He doesn't. Everyone has an opportunity to win the game and to succeed.
I'd like to play a game. Perhaps one that addresses those sticky fingers of yours. I've had my eyes on you, and I do not like what I see. Your job as a custodian is a noble one. Sanitizing and sterilizing the hospital, helping patients avoid sickness. But there is a sickness inside you that needs to be excised. You have the ability to not only save your soul today, but your sight. All you have to do is click the dial across the 5 positions, and you will live to see another day. You have 60 seconds.
Help me!
We have another clip for you. In this clip, we have a guy sitting in a room. He's in a chair. And then, on a tricycle, in comes Billy / Jigsaw. And he has a tray of medical equipment. And this guy's like, oh, I don't know what to do with it. But then things start going from there, and you'll hear the voice of John in the background, because, well, I shouldn't say in the background, he clicks on a recorder, and he was telling him this was going to go on. So it's just another one of those tension little moments of, here's the little situation you're in, What will you do to get out of it?
Medical supplies, I think, and there's a bone cutter.
The craniotome.
I don't care what the thing is called, Cecilia! There's this thing in there that says play me. I'm not gonna touch that thing.
Fine.
Hello, Mateo.
You know, something tells me I just would not handle that situation very well. Yes, you could save your butt, but man, the stuff you have to do to go through it. I wouldn't handle it well, I know it. But here's the deal. If you're this madman doing all these crazy things, doesn't he need an apprentice? Well, duh. Well, that's what we're going to talk about next. We're going to hear from Tobin Bell, and he talks about his character's apprentice, Amanda Young. And then we're going to go to the producers. And it's fun just hearing them talk about that whole process of, okay, the character that the main characters at a certain age, how could he be doing all these things? And then how they developed the character of Amanda, played by Shawnee Smith. Talk about that a little bit. And then we talk to Shawnee Smith just about how excited she is to be able to go all the way back to the beginning and then continue on with this character.
Amanda is John's apprentice. And like any apprentice, good apprentice, the apprentice wants to learn the trade of a skilled craftsman from the ground up. And that's what Amanda Young does. John, she successfully won her game back at the beginning of Saw. And you know, I don't know if you know Amanda's background, but she had a drug problem and was somewhat of a problematic, you know, struggling with her life. And John kind of got her on this track where she's living on the street for a while, and but he gave her a room in off of his workshop. And she has been there to help him on many occasions.
We originally wrote the script, or worked with the writers that wrote the script, because we don't write it. But Amanda wasn't really in it. And then we kind of realized that Tobin's 80 years old. People would look at it, how's John Kramer doing all the stuff that he's doing? And we realized we needed to bring in somebody. I think it was then that Oren came up with the idea of, like, why don't we make the person who's disguised, why don't we make that Shawnee in the script? And then we'll reveal it at some point during the movie. And the audience eats it up when they realize that that's who was doing all the stuff.
It's super fun to be able to come all the way back to the beginning. But leave that to the creators, writers, and fans. I mean, anything can happen with this in the Saw world. Even this, you know, 18 years later. It's crazy. But it's a powerful, the story's compelling, and the fans are just like, the Saw fans, next level. What's super exciting about this for the true fans is that you have John and Amanda, which, you know, like the idea of the male and female of Jigsaw is super interesting.
Now, when you make a movie with so many different movies involved, different directors, it's tough to keep things straight, keep the tone familiar, but still keep it fresh. That's an incredible thing to try to juggle. But what works for the director in this particular film is he's directed one of these movies before, a couple of them, I should say. But most importantly, he's been the editor on almost all of them. And that means that you're involved on every nuance, every inch of making that film, of the flow, the tension, the buildup, you name it. When you edit, there's not one frame that you don't touch and you're not aware of. So going in directing this movie with that whole line of movies behind, he knows every inch of this franchise. So we're going to hear from some of the people talking about that. We're going to hear from the production designer, the producers, Shawnee Smith, Tobin Bell, and then we're going to hear from the director himself and him talking about the grain, the texture, what kind of film they use, what they used to use, what the last film they actually shot on film was, and then they went to digital. But hearing those technical issues just tickles my brain, because film is wildly different than digital. You could try to smear up digital and try to add grain and all that, but it just never will be the same. I mean, you make great things with digital. I'm not saying that at all. But the texture of film is so greatly missed in my mind, because that gives so much to a film. You could just feel it. It doesn't feel plastic and artificial. And I know you'll hear him talk about how they try to mess it up a little bit, grain it up to try to make it feel more like film. And, you know, do they succeed? That's up to you to find out. But it's just the idea of them talking about that film has that oomph compared to digital.
Kevin, coming from an editing background, is like this major plus for the show and for Saw, because he knows what he needs. He knows what we want to put together visually, and also just like storytelling. I think that's the real key here, because we're visual storytellers. Like somebody says, what does a production designer do? I am a visual storyteller. I'm here to help the audience understand the story. We give them colors so that they know that they're in Mexico, colors so that they know that they're in the United States. You know, we enter this layer that is completely different from the rest of the movie. We want this sense of fish out of water when we come into Mexico. And, you know, talking about cast, you know, that was also the other part that we really love, because we're telling the story about, you know, who lives in this hacienda, you know, what is this scam? What is this operating theater? You know, when you go into the operating theater, you have to say to yourself, it was so underground, but it's believable, you know, and it's industrial. And so we just want to make sure all of that was true and that the story points were all there for the audience to be able to understand what they're watching. And Kevin, as an editor, was phenomenal in telling us, this is what we need, this is what we don't need, which is also quite important too. When I think of this film and this experience, I call it Spicy Saw, because it's picante, you know, and it's being shot here in Mexico, and it has just so much more color. I feel certainly previous films have color, but I think this one has a little bit more in some ways, you know, and I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Saw X was directed by Kevin Greudert, who directed two previous Saw movies and basically has edited pretty much all of them. He knows the franchise better, or as well as Orin and myself, if not better. And he was our first and only choice to direct this movie.
Kevin G is directing this film. It's really fun to work with him on this. They couldn't have hired a better director, because imagine like everything this man has to hold in his head all day long, like 18 years of details. But he's the right man for the job. You know, if anyone could hold all that in his head and be editing while he's filming this, it's him.
Kevin Greudert is directing this film with very strong credentials. He comes from editing, has been involved with Saw since the beginning, edited and directed. He's edited most of the Saw films, directed a few of them. So nobody knows Saw the way Kevin knows Saw. And he brings, I did another film with Kevin, a previous Saw film with Kevin, but I've gotten to know him more in this because I'm in so much of this film. So we've had lots of, I've gotten to have a working relationship with him, a deeper working relationship with Kevin. He's very detail-oriented. He's very shot-oriented, very edit-oriented. He knows what the shot he needs and wants because he knows how to make this film cut together so it has impact. And that's a marvelous thing.
Saw 6, the first one that I directed, was the last one to be shot on 35mm film. And I'm really glad that it was, even though it's hard to shoot on film. It's a lot more stressful than digital. But there is great value in the texture that you get from film. And once we did Saw 3D, which was shot at 2K res on a digital camera, we started to lose something. And then the subsequent Saw films were also digital. And maybe there was a little bit of filmish grain added afterward, but frankly, not a lot in those films. When I met Nick Matthews, the cinematographer and first camera operator for this movie, we both agreed that there was something lost after Saw 6 and that we wanted to bring it back. And even though we shot on digital, we lit it in a way that we thought emulated the look of the earlier films. And also we dirtied it up a bit in post-production.
I love the honesty and insights that they give like that, because you don't get that all the time from filmmakers talking about that process, that specific detail of messing up the digital and trying to make it feel a certain way. I'm so glad they were able to share that with us. Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from the producers, and they just pretty much tell us, thanking us, that this is why they made the movie for us as a thank you. And it's just really cool to hear these kind of interviews. And then we're going to hear from Tobin Bell also.
We really did this movie for the fans. We really tried to pay them back for the loyalty and the fans that have been there since Saw 1. And that's why there's the Easter eggs, there's throwbacks. We just really tried to say, you've asked for this movie, we're making this for you.
And to me, the most rewarding experience is when you see the movie finished opening weekend with an audience and they're jumping at the right places, they're laughing at the right places, they care. You're like, okay, guess what? Yeah, this was all worthwhile.
We've been able to create a layer in the Saw films that make people think. Not only is it a rollicking roller coaster ride of amazing special effects and situations and surprises and twists and turns, but we've been able to raise some subjects that make people go, oh, that's what he's, you know, and when you contrast a moment like that with what else is going on in the film, and all of a sudden this unexpected moment happens where people go, oh, it's the moment resonates.
So what do you guys think? Saw X, Saw 10 worth your time? Let me know what you think. Now, I really appreciate your time, and I hope you enjoyed our in-depth look at Saw X. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, any way to improve the show, please feel free to let me know. CinemaJudge@Hotmail.com or at Instagram, The Cinema Judge, or any other places, Threads, YouTube, Pinterest, Tumblr, Hive, Mastodon, TikTok, anywhere like that. As long as it's constructive, let me know, because I can't grow if I don't know. Also, if you ever go to the Metaverse, go to Horizon Worlds, show up there. I love talking movies with you guys. Usually I sit there late at night and we sit and talk TV and movies. It's a blast. Go to Laser Tag. There's a place called Ace of Clubs. Often I go there and I'm all over the place because people build some really cool worlds out there. And it's fun just to hang out and talk and just chat movies. But now it's shout out time. This is where I get a shout out to everybody listening to the last episode. And you might ask yourself, hey, whoa, buddy. I listened to one of the old shows and you didn't give me a shout out. Well, that stuff's almost impossible to track and keep order of. It's just easier when I look at last episode because it's all just right there. And I truly, truly thank you for taking time out of your busy life to listen to this show because it's a busy world out there. It's crazy and it's very noisy. And that's what we like to do here is just give you one movie, interviews, information, so you make up your own mind. I'm not going to sit here and yell and complain and cry about Hollywood. That's not our gig. We like to create a movie oasis, a place where you can just come here and listen. We all walk different paths. Who am I to tell you what to see or what not to see? Because any movie is somebody's favorite movie. Because we all want the same thing, an enjoyable movie experience. And I love hearing how you people listen to the show. Some of you listen when you're driving your car, sitting at home, going to work, or just relaxing. It doesn't matter. It's just awesome. So here's to all my listeners in the United States, Germany, you guys are awesome great. Canada, Vietnam, Australia, Poland, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Mexico, Austria, France, Singapore, Philippines, Minneapolis, Minnesota, St. Paul, Minnesota, Brandenburg, Brampton, Ontario, Stevenson's Ranch, California, Chicago, Illinois, Frankfurt am Main, Hesse. Hesse, you guys are incredible. Farmington, Minnesota, Howley, Minnesota, Clovis, New Mexico, Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota, Stillwater, Minnesota, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Ho Chi Minh, Valencia, California, Perth, Western Australia, North Brabant, Edina, Minnesota, Makati City, Metro, Manila, Warsaw, San Jose, California, Vienna, Munich, is it Pomona, New York? Seattle, Washington, Bismarck, North Dakota, New York, New York, North Rhine, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, Luxembourg, New Prague, Minnesota, Elk River, just to name a few. But every solitary one of you, you guys are rock stars for taking time out of your life to listen to the show. Woohoo! And this week's bourbon shout-out goes out to Henry and his friends. Let me tell you about this guy. Every time I have a mechanical issue with my lawnmower, snowblower, whatever it is, this guy is right there to help because I'm not Mr. Handy whatsoever. And a couple days ago, him and his friends mowed my lawn without me even asking. They went out of their way and took care of it because right now my hip is just killing me and I'm I'm waiting for have a hip surgery here eventually and I can't do squat. And he didn't even know that, but he still did it. He boom, boom, boom. So to you, Henry, and your friends, cheers. And like I told you guys earlier, this is first a TV show, and I just take that, get rid of the video, and create this podcast. Because obviously you can't see the people, that's what I'm here for, to guide you through. So that's what turns into the podcast. But I'm doing a TV show, though. I'm cranking tunes, just rocking out, because that's my happy place. Movies and music. I don't have to worry about any of this stuff, because sometimes it's even hard for me to form a sentence like this. So there, I don't have to worry about nothing. Just cranking, learning about a movie, and having a great time. And this week, I was like, well, what do I want? This is I need to find a moment, find a feel for this. But I go, you know what I need? I threw down some Rolling Stones, some Led Zeppelin, some Who, and I just stayed in that realm of that area because those guys have some just stellar tunes. I mean, every album you just go, yep, of everybody there. So that's what I threw down. I threw some Stones, some Zeppelin, the Who. And voila, I was just in my happy place. Well, that is it. I'm thirsty. My glass awaits. So cheers to you and to the movies. So till next time, be well, be good, and I'm gone. I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening to The Cinema Judge.